thank you all for joining us. It's just about exactly 6 o'clock Pacific time here, and 9 o'clock Eastern on September 21st. I think this is maybe the equinox, autumn equinox, and sure seems that the days are getting very short, very fast here lately. So we'll be having an opportunity for the next hour to hour and a half to go a little more deeply into the underlying ideas in the World Peace Diet. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, author of the World Peace Diet, and this is the World Peace Diet Circle call for members of the World Peace Diet Circle and people who are going through or have gone through the World Peace Diet Facilitator Training Program or the Mastery Training Program. And I'm delighted to be able to share this time with you. So let's get comfortable, and we have several things planned for this call. I mentioned in the last email that I sent out to everybody that Chrissy Benson will be joining us here toward the beginning of the call. And then later we'll be talking about some of the other issues. And, of course, as always, you are encouraged, if you have any questions, to press *6 or comments or concerns or anything you'd like to share with our community, press *6, and I can respond and others can respond to that. So it's wonderful to be able to have this opportunity once a month. And I think, as I mentioned also in the last email that I sent out, we are going to be heading off in a couple of weeks to Europe and Asia, and we won't be able to do a call for 2 months. So this is, I just don't see any way that will be possible. So and this one will be a little break until December, third Thursday in December. All right, so we like to begin by taking just a short amount of time to turn our attention within. So let's do that now, wherever you happen to be. Close your eyes if you can. I think it's a little easier, or obviously keep them open if it's not appropriate. And let's just give thanks for this precious opportunity that we have this evening to be together in this way through the connection that we have electronically. And we know that connection is a manifestation of a deeper connection that we have in our minds and hearts and in our spirit and in our caring for not only other human beings and for ourselves and our loved ones, but for the whole web of life, for the beings we refer to as animals, those who are enslaved in animal agriculture operations, as well as other ways that they're harmed. We especially hold them in our hearts right now, as well as animals that are free-living but are having their habitats decimated and are being hunted or harmed in various ways. So we just take a few minutes now to embrace all these animals, non-human animals or animals that share this earth with us, from the largest to the smallest, and hold them in our hearts with a feeling of respect and kindness and love and mercy and tenderness, a sense of appreciation and gratitude for their presence here on earth, on our beautiful earth. And we give thanks also for their constant reminder of the celebratory nature of life here, their tremendous capacities, the beauty that they bring to our lives. This quote by Hubert Reeves at the top of the resources for September 2017, I really liked, because I think it points at a deeper truth. He says, "Man is the most insane species. He worships an invisible God while he slaughters a visible nature, without realizing that this nature he slaughters is the invisible God he worships." And I think that is a beautiful statement, even though it's maybe, I wouldn't compose it exactly the same way, but the underlying idea that this outer natural world is a manifestation of consciousness that is very profound and beautiful enormously complex and mysterious, and it is us, really, the world and nature. So we give thanks for this opportunity we have to be together, and for nature and animals, and for our time on this earth, for this precious lifetime. And we give thanks also for everyone who is working along with us, wherever they may be on this planet, in whatever continent and country and community they're in, to help bring peace and love and understanding and respect to our relationships with animals and with each other. And we give thanks to those who have gone before us and those who are to come, and all who have helped to awaken us to a deeper understanding of the interconnectedness of all life and the preciousness of this opportunity that we have. We give thanks knowing also that we are part of an awakening of human consciousness, that this is happening, and that we are learning and developing and evolving in our understanding of how we can fulfill our purpose here on this earth and celebrate our lives as we're intended to, rather than destroying the creation. We give thanks for everyone on this call, and we give thanks knowing that all the ripples that radiate out into the world from our being together will bring peace and healing, joy and love and freedom into our world. And so it is. All right, so thanks again, everyone, for the efforts that you've been making, all the efforts that brought you here to our call this evening, and the efforts, I know that there's so many things that we are not able to talk about. I think every effort that we make, whether it's a sort of an outer effort of sharing a vegan message with an individual or a group in some way, or whether it's a much smaller thing, like maybe hanging up the dish towel in the kitchen after drying the dishes with a sense of love and appreciation. All these things, the big and the small, I think, work together to help bring us into a more authentic alignment with what veganism is all about, which is love and joy and freedom and respect and nonviolence. So there's so many challenges that we face today. I think in the movement we're challenged by not only the resistance of the industries, the resistance of people who have been programmed, the resistance within our own relationships we have with people, the resistance very often even within our own minds and thoughts, and maybe some people feel even within their own bodies. And they also really, in many ways, it's kind of somewhat sad, but also, I guess, to be expected, resistance from people within our own movement. Sometimes we feel that other vegans are perhaps attacking us or doing things in a way that we think are not very wise. So there's lots of resistance. And I think the whole idea here is to support each other and to make as much progress as we can individually and contribute to the collective unfoldment of our society. So I'd like to introduce Christy Benson, who I think, from what I know, is a beautiful example of this. And she's a health life coach. She's gone through our Opie's Diet training and is a facilitator. She's also certified as a vegan lifestyle coach through Victoria Moran, who I just saw and had tea with her in New York City a few days ago when I was out there, and really like the work that she's doing. She's an old friend and a long-time co-collaborator, I would say, in many ways, to help bring the vegan message and the spirituality message to the world. So she's gone through that training, and also gone through the plant-based nutrition certification and training with the T. Coleman Campbell Foundation at Cornell, through Cornell University. So that's that. And then also she's trained in internal family systems, which is a therapy that she can tell us more about, but has to do with family relationships and dynamics. And then the other thing I think is interesting is that she is now the founder, actually, of a support group for vegans and other people who are interested in veganism or just curious about it, called Vegan Peace. And so she's now in Nashville and is with us on the call, which I'm really glad to hear. So I just thought it would be nice to have a conversation with Chrissy and listen in and see what things she's doing. And perhaps if you have any comments or questions, press star 6 on your phone. And then that will basically alert me to your interest in saying something. All righty. So I'm going to unmute Chrissy, and we can begin. Chrissy, are you there?
I am here. Thank you so much, Will, for having me.
So how are things in Tennessee? Nashville. That's a big change from New York City, I guess.
It's a little bit of a change, but things are great. And, in fact, I just came from a little festival in my neighborhood honoring International World Peace Day, which I guess is Saturday. But there's an artist who's going around the country painting world peace murals. And so tonight there was a little festival in my neighborhood honoring World Peace Day, and I brought a few copies of the World Peace Diet book and, you know, chatted with some of the people there about my new group, Vegan Peace. And lo and behold, the performer who was at the festival is vegan himself, and I chatted with him about the World Peace Diet. And I also spoke with the artist who's going around the country painting these World Peace murals, and gave him a copy of the World Peace Diet.
Oh, thanks.
And he was very interested. And you could tell he was one of the so many people who just kind of haven't quite yet made that connection between world peace and, you know, the violence on our plates.
Right.
Yeah.
So this artist was not a vegetarian or vegan, as far as you can tell.
Right. But he seems very interested, and you can tell he's completely sincere and passionate about his mission to spread the concept of world peace. And so I talked with him at some length, and
That's so good. You know, that's one of the things I'll just emphasize here. You know, it's great, I think, to share the message of the World Peace Diet with you know, anybody, but I think especially when we, by chance or by design, we connect with people like you're talking about who are reaching lots of people, then, you know, it really can have a multiplier effect. You know, if he you know, gets on board, and sometimes you never know. Sometimes it may be someone who you don't think will have much of an impact, and all of a sudden there they are a few years later reaching thousands or even millions of people. So it's great, I think, to take any opportunity. I really love that you're doing that. That's so beautiful.
Thank you.
Tell us maybe a little bit about some of the things I mentioned in my introduction to you. I think it would be so great just to hear a little bit about how all this works in your life. Yeah.
Of course, yeah. Well, would you like to hear? You'd like to hear about Vegan Peace specifically?
Definitely, yeah. That and maybe your experience with these other program trainings, and also with your family. If that has any bearing on things, I think it's nice to help people, you know, cross fertilize ideas. So
right.
You know.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, I'm a health coach. And I do, you know, talk with people a lot about nutrition and physical health, but, you know, obviously there's a lot more to health than simply you know, our physical bodies. And so that's why I became trained in internal family systems therapy, which is, it's a great, really interesting model that was created by a psychologist from Boston named Dick Schwartz. And basically the concept, IFS in a nutshell, it harnesses the concept that we all have different parts to our personalities. And each one of these parts acts kind of like a person. So it's essentially like we've got our own internal family kind of, you know, within us. And
right.
some of these parts can cause some problems, you know. And so IFS, anxiety is an example that's pretty easy to understand. Like if people have anxiety, typically they, you know, they walk around and they're frustrated and they're trying to get rid of it, and that doesn't really work. And so IFS teaches that, okay, for one, your anxiety, that's just a part of you. It's just one part. And if we talk to that part like a person, treat the anxiety, the anxious part like an individual, then we can really gain a lot of interesting insight. And just like people in the real world, these parts, more than anything, they desire to be seen and acknowledged and understood. So IFS therapy, it's very different from traditional talk therapy where you kind of go in and tell a therapist your problems or your background, and then the therapist sort of comes back to you with an answer. IFS,
right.
What I really like about it is that it recognizes all the answers are within the client. So the IFS facilitator will essentially facilitate a dialogue between a client and his or her parts. And so basically, it takes a little getting used to, but the model really works well. So for instance, with the anxious part, you know, the facilitator would say, you know, well, ask this part why she feels the need to, you know, to act the way she's acting or do what she's doing. And then, you know, the client will sort of, you know, get quiet and check with the part and come up with an answer. And invariably, what's revealed is that all of these parts, you know, whether they're a part like anxiety or an addictive part, they're all trying to help in some way. You know, they may be causing a lot of collateral damage in the process, but generally, for instance, an anxious part is just about always trying to keep you safe, you know. And so
right.
Once the client begins to recognize that, like, okay, for one, it changes the dynamic, it changes the relationship. Suddenly, instead of this part that's causing you problems that you walk around just trying to oust from your being, it becomes more of a flawed friend who has good intentions, but isn't necessarily operating in a way that's skillful or beneficial. And just like parts, just like people, these parts can learn new skills. You know, so the parts, for one, it's really beneficial just for the parts to be conversed with and acknowledged
right.
and appreciated for what they're trying to do. And meanwhile,
right.
all the other parts in the background that you're not working mm-hmm. with directly, they witness this interaction. They witness this one part being treated with respect and genuine curiosity, and that kind of eases the tension within the whole internal family system, because they think, okay, if this part is being treated with kindness and respect, then that makes things a lot safer overall. And like I said, the parts can learn. You know, if you have an anxious part, it's not like you're stuck with that part in that form forever. You know, an anxious part can learn new skills, can learn new ways of going about
right.
Their business.
So do you
yeah.
find that this also kind of relates to your vegan coaching? I mean, are you able to help? I mean, does this help people to transition to veganism? If they're, I mean, have you found that at all? Like if there's an anxious part, they're afraid to give up meat or afraid what their husband's going to think if they do or give or whatever.
Right.
I mean,
is this
anything related to? I mean, is this something that we can learn? I mean, I hear some things that sound like, you know, being an effective vegan advocate means learning to listen to people also and respect and listen respectfully and let them know that we mm-hmm. are not just sitting there judging, criticizing, and shaming
right.
them for their behavior. We're like,
right.
you know, we have this other, you know, this capacity to listen, then we're also being an example. So anyway, that's my question, I guess. Does this relate to the sharing the Rupi Sai message? Have you found that, or do you hope that you will, or how's that, how's that going?
Yeah, I haven't applied IFS much directly in terms of helping people go vegan, but mm-hmm. informally I certainly have, because I think it's very relevant to the process of going vegan, because we almost always have some mixed feelings about going vegan. I mean,
right,
like as it stands now, I am incredibly grateful to be vegan, and I feel enormously lucky to have discovered this way of life. But when I first went vegan, I was very reluctant. You know, it was more mm-hmm. just that given all I had learned, I felt less and less able to justify what I was mm-hmm. consuming, and, you know, kind
right.
of at a certain point thought, well, I'm going to have to do it. I may as well do it. So we have, you know, we have different parts involved, and they're just about always, you know, there's a part that wants to be good and wants to live with integrity, and then there's the part that just wants the hamburger, or, you know, just wants to fit in with the rest of society and not be different
right.
and not have to create sort of a scene when going out to a restaurant. So, yeah, I think IFS is very relevant. But I think it's more the fact that IFS recognizes what's already going on with people. You know, it's not like IFS made up this model out of nowhere. The model evolved out of what's already happening. You know, people already
right.
kind of use IFS language in real life. They talk about, well, part of me wants to do this and part of me wants to do that. And
mm-hmm.
I do think that, yeah, that's especially visible with the process of going vegan, because, yeah,
right.
it doesn't generally happen, you know, without at least a few parts not being thrilled about the prospect.
Yeah, right. I write about that in the Rupi Sai. Like, there's a little boy, maybe a little girl inside us that remembers the smell of the pot roast, and what that means.
Right, exactly.
Now, you know, I'm smelling nothing but hemp, and that doesn't smell the same.
Exactly.
Well,
you know, yeah, exactly. That's a perfect example.
I remember when I was in college, the Gestalt therapy was quite the rage, and it was very similar in the sense that I remember learning how if you had an anxiety or an anger or something, you would just take that out, you know, sort of as a being within you and put it outside and then talk to it and then listen to it and listen to him or her and what he has to say to you
right.
and you say to them. It was sort of a Fritz Perls, I think, was onto something similar. But it's, I think you're right. It's based on a very healthy way of respecting ourselves as sort of multidimensional beings. Let's talk about the other thing we mentioned, or I mentioned when I introduced you, which is your support group. Is that an online thing, or how's that working?
It's in person. It's here in Nashville. And
oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it was inspired just because, I mean, like I mentioned, I feel so grateful to be vegan, and I'm just absolutely thrilled and delighted to be vegan. But that being said, you know, it can get a little challenging and a little isolating at times just
mm-hmm.
following the vegan track and being different from the large, large majority of the rest of society. And
right.
I just, you know, and often during the course of a week, there will be sort of these moments or these encounters that only another vegan can really understand. And
right.
so I
exactly.
really just thought that would be so great to have a place just to be able to check in on a weekly basis and just kind of do some vegan venting, do a little self-reflection, utilizing
uh-huh.
some of the principles from the World Peace Diet and other spiritual traditions, and just, you know, having a place to connect and build fellowship and camaraderie and
right.
not have it be a big deal either. You know, just have it kind of be a regular weekly thing where people can pop in and get something off their chest. And
right.
so I kind of used as my model sort of the 12-step meetings, you know, which utilize that group support and just, you know, we're all dealing with, you know, a particular issue that we have in common. And in the case of veganism, it's a positive issue rather than an addiction. But
right.
I kind of used that as my model and then just scoped out some places around town and ended up finding a church nearby,
uh-huh.
near where I live, that offered to let us use a room, you know, at no charge, just at the cost of,
yeah.
you know, if anything we chose to contribute toward utilities or whatever. And I just, you know, kind of am still getting the word out as best I can. But it's really been nice. I've played
so
around
you get
with
together
the format.
Every, like once a week and on a week,
yeah.
week, like every day, like on a Wednesday or whatever, you pick a day and then everybody shows up and then you have like
yeah.
a support group. Yes, and you
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, great.
So the format, yeah, so we happen to have it from on Saturday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. here in Nashville, and it's just a regular thing. People come in, and it's structured. It's like a meeting, so we come in, and I start and close the meetings with a quote from the World Peace Diet, and then we begin with a speaker, and so I,
mm-hmm.
you know, book sort of not, I don't pay the person, but I invite, you know, a vegan of some sort to come speak for about 15 to 20 minutes and just tell their vegan story and kind of what prompted them to go vegan and what it's like now. And then we open it up to group sharing and discussion. And then the last segment of the meeting, I leave open for kind of a Q&A or an opportunity for people who are new vegans or not yet vegans who, you know,
uh-huh.
may be struggling with a particular issue, and that's a time where they can get some questions answered and get some feedback.
Wow, that's fabulous. You know, I mean, that's
yeah.
it's a great thing. So people can talk really about anything. I mean, whether it's like,
right.
where do I get my B12 or what do I say
right.
to my mother-in-law or I mean,
exactly.
my doctor?
Yeah.
There's 10,000.
Right.
Different types of questions people have, and I think the fact that you've gone through these various trainings has given you probably confidence to address a lot of people's concerns. I always say it's not necessarily a good idea to answer people's questions because that sometimes stops the process, but to kind of share some of your insight, you know, and
right,
support and what you've learned, you know, from your experience and. And
right.
that's so helpful because I think you're right. So many people go vegan or are thinking of going vegan or in that transitional phase, and then for some reason they just feel like, oh, my gosh, it's just overwhelming because usually it's a social thing. Sometimes it's health.
Right.
But a lot of times it's
right.
the social dimension. They just, you know, food is how we bond and people are.
Right.
So you're providing not only positive feedback for people, but also an actual place where they can be socially together with other people who understand
right.
the issues. Yeah.
yeah,
wow.
yeah. We often go out for coffee after the meeting and kind of hang out.
Right.
But yeah, it's been really nice, and you know, and it's not just me answering people's questions. You know, the segment at the end is basically anybody who has
right,
you know
right.
feedback or suggestions.
Right.
So
right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's yeah.
excellent. Uh huh. Yeah. Okay. And everyone who's listening here, please press *6. Sometimes people are shy. I know we get quite a few people on the line, but I think if you want to ask a question or make a comment with Chris C before we move on to the next thing, please do so. And yeah, I think that's so inspiring, you know, to have that kind of a forum. And I think Nashville is probably a good place to have it. I mean, I think you should probably do it anywhere, but I have a feeling from my travels that in the more it's an urban environment, but it's in the South that it's maybe
right.
A little harder for people to feel accepted, you know, being vegan.
Yeah.
I remember going to the Whole Foods in Nashville
right.
and you just smell, you know, barbecue from as soon as you walk in.
yeah, yeah. And people really think they're the only ones. They really think
right.
they're the only vegans around. And but at the same time, Nashville is pretty progressive for a southern
right,
city.
Right.
So
right.
It's interesting. I mean, since I just started Vegan Peace in July, so it's only been a few months, so it's still evolving, and I'm kind of still, you know, getting a sense of whom we're drawing to the group. It's at this point, it's been, you know, some committed vegans, relatively long-term committed vegans, but it's also been some people who aren't yet vegan. And so it's been...
That's great, too.
Yeah, it's been a cool...
Yeah, that's really... One thing I want to mention in relation to that, just everybody, something that you maybe have heard me say before, but this idea that, well, I just want to get non-vegans to come, you know, to a lecture or to a group or something. I don't want to preach to the choir. I really think that whole idea is misguided. It's very misguided that, you know, if we want to spread this to other people and not just preach to the choir. Because, first of all, there's really a huge need, I think, among a lot of people who are who identify themselves as vegans for support.
And for
not only support, but also, being vegan is a whole spectrum. And so if I'm, I may be vegan, but not very well versed in actually all the different things. And so as we understand now, I'm finding this out more and more, that a lot of people do actually go vegan, even very often for, what they think are the, vegan reasons, like compassion for animals. But a few years later, they're not vegan anymore. The pressure was just, for whatever reason, was too much. So, we certainly do want to have people who are not vegans coming and hearing about the message, but I think we should never feel that we're preaching to the choir. Like, this is something that's just redundant. They don't need to hear it. That's really, I think, absolutely incorrect because, I know even me now in 37 years or whatever, a vegan, I'm still finding, I'm learning a lot every day from things I'm reading, what I've learned. It's a never-ending process of growth and refinement and awareness and learning. And we can help each other with that. So I love it. I love it when people who are, whatever they are, vegans, vegetarians, pre-vegans, or however you want to call it, that we just have an open door and it's good for, we can all become more skilled, I think, at sharing the vegan message, too.
And that's exactly how I saw this group. And, I had to mention that it's kind of ironic because we meet in the choir room of the church. In terms of preaching to the choir, it's perfect. But I envisioned this group as largely appealing to vegans. I founded it for sort of selfish reasons, just because as a committed vegan, I felt a need for something like that or a desire for something like that. So that's kind of who I envisioned. I agree. There are so many lapsed vegetarians and vegans. And in fact, I don't know, according to some statistics, most vegans and vegetarians end up becoming non-vegans and vegetarians. I don't know if that's true, but if it is, then preventing, recidivism, if you will, among vegans is just as crucial, if not more crucial, than, requiring people to go vegan.
Right.
And, all that being said, I certainly didn't want to shut the door to non-vegans. Because, for one, that's a line that I use in the meeting format is, we welcome everyone seeking to lead a more peaceful, compassionate life. While we consider veganism a key component of this effort, everyone is welcome at Vegan Peace. No one will ever be excluded for not being a perfect vegan. Because, if we did that, I probably wouldn't get to go either. certainly imperfect in plenty of ways.
Well, that's very interesting. Yeah, I do think that some of those statistics on recidivism rate of veganism are inaccurate, I think. I don't think it's as high. Because it's for a whole variety of reasons we can talk about. But I think in any event, it is something even beyond recidivism, just basically to deepen our understanding of it. So it's so important. But But yeah, that is an issue. And the other thing I was just wondering if you could say a few words about too, is, well, maybe before I leave this, so do you have any other thoughts about your vegan peace group? I mean, is this something that you're planning on just doing indefinitely, or do you have a certain time frame in mind, or you've been doing it now for a few months, a couple of months, I guess, and is it something you just
yeah.
want to keep going on a weekly basis?
Yeah, I mean, it's weekly is a little bit challenging at this point because, you know, it's kind of just me keeping it going in terms of, you
right.
know, leading the meetings and that sort of thing. But ultimately, I envision it. Again, I'm
yeah.
kind of using the 12-step world as my model. So
right.
that those meetings are never contingent on any one person. So that's ultimately where I see it going. But, yeah, for now I do
uh-huh.
Do plan on keeping it going continuously. And then I think I probably will at some point, you know, do sort of a side group that's more of a focused book study on the World Peace Diet that'll
uh-huh.
give people, you know, a chance to really delve in. And that will be a finite period of time. That will be maybe
right.
an 8-week group that, you know, read two
right.
chapters a week, something along those
right.
lines. But yeah, for now, vegan peace is yeah, no end in sight. And I'm
great.
Really grateful to the, you know, the church that offered us the space. It
right.
coincidentally it turned out that the daughter of the pastor of the church is 16 years old and apparently she's a vegetarian. And
ah.
so I think that might have made them a little more amenable
uh-huh.
to hosting
right.
our group. And that's also part of my motivation. I mean, our group is not religious in any way, but
right.
I do like the idea of being connected, you know, kind of injecting sort of the vegan peace message into, you know, an
yes.
organized religion church
right.
to kind
there
of get them thinking a
yes.
little bit. And in
right.
fact, the pastor has asked me if his daughter, you know, can come to the group at some point.
Nice.
Of course, I said, yeah. He's a little nervous that she'll go vegan because he says that
right.
vegetarian is bad enough and he doesn't want her going vegan. But, yeah, so
right.
so we'll see. And I just like the idea because I can tell, again, this church, I can tell they're sincere in what they're trying to do and they
right.
claim to be, you know, progressive and be proponents of peace. And, you know, it's who can really argue with peace? That's a worthy mission.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
I kind of like, you know, attaching vegan to peace
to
and,
peace.
You know,
right.
that kind of maybe gets people thinking twice.
Right, right, right. Yeah, and then I was wondering if you could say something about your, those three trainings you took, the other two, the Victoria Moran one and the, just, you know, basically, did you find them very helpful and all that in helping you with where you are now?
Yeah, they're so helpful. I knew quite a bit about nutrition when I did the T. Colin Campbell course in plant-based nutrition, and so I was a little concerned that I might not get that much out of it. But I really did. I mean, it was wonderful and the content was just really spot on and it really did give me a chance to delve deeper into some of the science behind it and just to
right.
give me just a more comprehensive understanding of the nutritional aspects of veganism. And honestly,
right.
I think part of my motivation in taking that course, I remember when I signed up for it, you had to sort of state your motivation. And I think I said I wanted a better understanding of the physical benefits in order to make my animal activism more effective.
Right, right.
Kind of
mm-hmm.
to be able to give. So I was clear on my primary motivation, you know, health
right.
kind of the secondary one. But, yeah, it was a wonderful course,
right.
and I'm just a big admirer of T. Colin Campbell. I think he's just
mm-hmm.
a man of such integrity, and he's so smart and
right.
just so down to earth, and I just enjoy
right.
listening to him talk. So,
right,
so
right,
that
right.
That was great,
yeah.
too. And then, yeah, and then Victoria Moran's training was wonderful, and, I mean, probably what I value most of all was that it gave me the opportunity to get to know Victoria, who, like you said, has been at this for a long time. I mean, she
right.
got it really quickly. And as you mentioned, I moved to Nashville recently from New York City, but I was in New York City for 6.5 years. So after I did Victoria's training, you know, I stayed in touch with Victoria. And in fact, I don't know if you remember, but I got to co-host her radio show a few years ago, and I helped interview you on that
show. Oh, my gosh.
So it's very funny to be on the receiving end of the interview
right
now. But Victoria's just been a wonderful support and ally. And again, this is the real deal. And, you know, among other things, one of the things I'm most grateful to in discovering the vegan lifestyle, the vegan world is just, I mean, I just think some of the most incredible people on the planet are, you know, in this world, you know, yourself included, and Dr. Campbell and, you know, Victoria. I mean, I just never would have gotten to know, you know, even by, even from a distance, you know, these wonderful people. So, Victoria's been, like I said, just a wonderful ally and support. She came to Nashville a few months ago, actually, for the Veg Fest. She was one of the speakers. So, yeah, I highly recommend her course. It's a great immersive training, and it's a lot of fun. You get to meet lots of other people who are like-minded and really interested in taking their veganism to the next level. And it's also pretty cool because a lot of these people go on to accomplish great things, you know, so you kind of get to know them early on and then see where they go from there.
Right. Yeah, we've had that with our course, too. It's great to see
Kip
and a lot of people have done.
Right,
and I'm always glad to see. I was talking to Victoria. I think she's still makes the World Peace Diet required reading for her Main Street Vegan program, too, which I think is kind of nice.
Very nice.
Well, great. Well, it's so good to hear. I guess I'll get with the last call. Does anyone have any questions or comments for Chrissy? Maybe everybody just thinks that it's all
I'll just mention that if anybody out there in the rest of the country is, you know, potentially interested in starting a local vegan piece, I'd be happy to, you know, send the meeting format I use or just be in touch about, you know.
Okay, so what I can do, why don't you maybe just maybe mention now your email. Is that okay to do? And if you mind?
Of course,
it's just a small group here.
Yeah.
And then I can maybe put it on the email that I sent out. Not everybody gets that, but maybe you can mention that.
It's cee.benson, BENSON, @gmail.com.
Great. So it's just, C as in Charlie, EE, Edward, .benson @gmail.com.
Correct.
And, this has been very interesting. We went a little longer than I thought we would, but it's been very fascinating and very inspiring to actually hear what you're doing. And I love the idea of a vegan peace group in Nashville and in Tulsa and, you know, Seattle and everywhere else. I think it's, you know, it's a great idea. A place where people can talk about the intersectionalities of our food and what's happening in the world itself and even things, you know, I don't know if you talk about things like, you know, just the war situation, so many things environmental, but it's all interconnected each one of us can make a positive difference, you know, instead of just feeling like we have nothing we can do to stop Trump from bombing the world or whatever it is. We can actually do something immediate, and because I think really, as long as we're going to be conducting this war against animals on such a massive scale, how can we expect that we're not going to have war among each other? So we have to address that, and I think it's great that you're actually doing this on an ongoing basis. So thanks so much. Yeah, I really appreciate
your
sharing, because it's been delightful, delightful, really fantastic. Okay.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thanks. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, that was so interesting. I really enjoyed that. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. And I'm sitting here now. We've gone through about 45 minutes, actually, of our time, about maybe another 40 minutes or so left. There's a few things I would definitely like to share. I'm sitting here. One thing is kind of very mundane, but kind of interesting, and that is that Madeline just brought me a little snack, and it's something that we just heard about recently. I want to share it with you. It's sweet potato toast, and so I just want to recommend. It's like the newest cool thing. I guess some woman just really had a craving for toast. She got up to her horror, she discovered that there was no bread in the house. She was kind of desperate for some toast, and I think she wanted some peanut butter and jelly on toast. And so she sliced a sweet potato thin, like about a quarter inch, put it in the toaster, a couple of slices in the toaster, and lo and behold, it was absolutely fabulous. And I heard about it on a Wolfie's Diet Facebook group, and told Madeline, and we've been having sweet potato toast a few times, and you can have it any way. You can have it kind of like with sprouts and tempeh and tomato, or you can have it with peanut butter, or jelly and peanut butter, right? Or almond butter or something like that. So we can have it with hummus. Yeah. Anyway, it's sweet potato is a very healthy food. A lot of people consider it a superfood. It's just loaded with all kinds of vitamins, minerals, and nutrients and so forth. And you can slice it thin and put it in your toaster and have all kinds of good toppings on it. And I'm telling you, the universe of vegan food unfolds like a kaleidoscope or like this never-ending spiraling mandala of delight. You know, it's like it's so great. It's just the food itself is enough to sell it really for me at this point, but of course there's so much more. One of the things that Chrissy mentioned, we talked about a little bit together. She talked about how it's nice to have a sort of a safe place where people can get together and who are vegans and talk about some of the issues and so forth that they face. And once in a while I think about how there's this whole gap in our language. Like, for example, we're speaking English, so this would be true for any language, but like an English language, that we really should invent some new words for the emotional states that only vegans can experience. You know, there's so many emotions and feelings that we as vegans have that the general population can't even conceive of. And so there's no words for them. You know, when someone says they feel joy, I mean, this is like basically the herding culture's language. This is a language created by the herding culture. If someone says they feel anger or someone says, whatever it is. But as vegans, I think we have versions of these feelings that are different. They're more intense or they're just different. And so I've been kind of thinking about that, how it would be, one way to do it would be to put the letter V in front of a lot of words, like maybe the anger that we feel at seeing abuse of animals, that's a specific feeling of anger, or the joy that vegans feel. You know, to me it's like we can feel joy, I really feel, at a much freer, deeper, more cosmic level, because we're not eating the flesh of abused animals. And so the joy, the word joy, just doesn't do it anymore. We should have boy instead of joy, or sadness. You know, the sadness, people have the sadness, but there's a certain sadness, I think, that we as vegans experience when we see and contemplate, so badness. And so forth, or like the word to savor, to really savor food or to savor a moment. But as vegans, I think it's a different, we could have the word favor. So anyway, I'm all in favor of creating a whole new lexicon of words, to help more accurately identify the whole universe or the world that we inhabit when we come home to our true nature. That we shouldn't really be stuck with these words that have certain connotations and meanings that really don't apply to us in many ways. And so anyway, I'll write an article about this, but that's something I think is kind of exciting to contemplate. And I think about that, just going through life, how we have these levels of feeling that are quite different and more intense in some ways. And it's very beautiful. Sometimes they're more, they're worse than maybe people experience who are eating animal foods. And that's where I made a word, horror, like the horror that we are aware of when animals are being, terribly abused. And but this vorer, is this a word that would capture this as a vegan. It's because it's compassion and horror together for beings who aren't even, when we hook a fish, when someone hooks a fish and drags her out of the water, that's considered, fun. That's considered a peaceful day. I'm going to go fish and have a peaceful day of joy and relaxation and fun and catch a few fish. What a great thing, we can't tolerate having the same language as these people. We should have a word like horror, the horror of contemplating this kind of mentality is loose in the world. And our feeling for aquatic animals, what they have to endure at the hands of human beings who see them as just objects to be used, we need to really create this new language. So that's my idea about that. And I also wanted to read a poem that I wrote. I went away a couple of weeks ago to the Sierras. It was really wonderful. I had all by myself in this tent in the middle of nowhere. And I had three alpine lakes all to myself. I didn't see a soul for the 4 days I was out. Three and a half or 4 days. And this poem I shared with nobody except for Madeline. This is the first time anyone's ever heard it. But it's kind of long, but it's just a little story. It's actually happened. So bear with me. I think you'll enjoy it. It's called Mother Mouse. And this is the poem. On a solo meditation retreat high in the Tahoe wilderness, the third night in my little tent, I hear scratching sounds coming from my backpack, hanging on a nearby ponderosa pine. Check watch, 1:15 a.m., and put on headband flashlight. Unzip the tent door, and yes, there it is again, scurrying sounds in the pack. Maybe one of those many squirrels around here. Concerned about their sharp teeth, I shake it, open the top, and command, come on out. But nothing happens. So I pull the pack off the tree and turn it upside down. Everything comes tumbling out, but no little creature. And curiously, a single paper napkin has been chewed into hundreds of tiny pieces, like snow fluttering to the pine-strewn earth. Then I see her, a little mouse, still clinging on inside. And so shake once more. Out she tumbles to the ground and scurries off into the darkness. Checking the pack, I see the front pocket had been filled with mouse confetti. It's all cleared out, so I put everything back in. The food is in glass and plastic jars, and everything is fine. Looking again now on the ground more closely, I see a worm-like creature, quite revolting looking, dark, grayish brown, wrapped in a tight membrane, with sealed shut eyes. My gosh! A just-born tiny mouse. There's another, and another, and another, four in all. Strewn about among tissue paper of their former nest, shivering and helpless in the cold. Just then, Mama Mouse returns and walks right up to a fifth little neonate I hadn't seen. She's right in the bright field of my headlamp, just 3 feet away. her brave, dark eyes focused only on her task. She picks up the little one in her front paws and raises him delicately to her mouth. After a few seconds, he's secured. She turns and runs off with him into the night. I realize this is the only way to save him. So I turn off my light, head into the tent, zip it up, and lie down again. When morning comes, I step carefully out, and yes, sure enough, Mother Mouse has taken all five babies away. And she's even taken most of the tissue paper nesting as well. I send her love and apologize and wish her family well. Soon I'll be packing up to leave, but I've been inspired by the caring and the courage of Mother Mouse. So, that's my poem. It really happened. And yeah, I know I felt bad. I've had experiences actually in my pack really getting pretty badly damaged by mice or squirrels biting through the fabric to get to something they think is inside. And they can smell anything really. So I just thought I have to, protect my pack from whoever it is that was scrambling around in there. And then I discovered these little tiny, they look like little like little pieces of liver, meat or something with little eyes. And they must have been just born. They were tiny. They were just so small. Yeah, so anyway, it was beautiful, though, just to be up there in the middle of nowhere. I wrote another little poem called House of Cards. This is a little more, can't stand a very short poem. The title is House of Cards. We live in a house of cards. Plastic payments by meat, eggs, and cheese, and drag fish from the seas, pulling calves from their mothers, and filling our world with cries of pain and disease. Our plastic cards buy whatever we please. They reach relentlessly, grabbing life from birds, fishes, and bees, lost in our appetites, our ears block their pleas. The winds blow stronger every day. How long before this house of cards is blown away? So the house of credit cards we've built here, and I think the animals of the world will be glad when we're no longer using our plastic cards to destroy their lives. And so thank you for indulging me reading a couple of new poems, and so, what else? There's a few things I wanted to address also. This is kind of just in the middle of the time, but Madeline and I were recently up in Redding, California, and in Mount Shasta, California. And we gave lectures there. They went very well. It was really very inspiring to see how the grassroots movement like Christy was talking about, just like grassroots getting together with local people once a week in the basement of the church, whatever it is, and sharing. That's something very beautiful, I think. So we had similar things. We had one at the Unity Church in Reading, and the minister was there, and some of the people from the church were there. And Victoria, actually, and I have, Victoria Moran, we talked about earlier, have quite a history together with Unity Church. As many of you know, Madeline and I have been going to Unity Churches for 25 years, full-time, and speaking. And Victoria was pretty much raised in Unity also, and speaks quite a bit at Unity Churches. And her radio show that Chrissy mentioned is on Unity Radio. So she told me that her radio show is the most popular radio show in the whole Unity Radio broadcast station. They have about probably 30 or 40 programs. So hers is called Main Street Vegan, and it's really about veganism. So so we were talking about how the new president of Unity, or executive CEO of Unity, I guess it's whatever it is, the head of the organization, and the national headquarters, is somewhat open to, I think he's a vegetarian, he's kind of open to veganism, and the new vice president is a vegan, the woman, she's a woman. And how they're now, for the very first time, Unity stopped being a vegan organization or a vegetarian organization, which it was for quite a few years, up until the 50s and early 60s, that they are interested in bringing it back again, to make it as one of the principles, or to include it as one of the principles of Unity, vegetarian and or vegan compassion for animals, because that was part of the original founding vision of Charles and Myrtle Fillmore. So that's, I think, a very positive development. And so we gave a lecture at the Unity Church in Reading, and the minister seemed very happy, even though I gave a pretty strong lecture, actually. But it went really well. And then we went to Mount Shasta, and even though that's a place where there's an awful lot of things going on, usually not very good turnouts from what I heard, we had a good turnout. And some people came all the way from Weaverville, and some high school students came all the way from there. So we had a good turnout there. And I wanted to share, though, that there was a woman who attended the lecture there who wanted me to mention something to everybody and just put it out there. So this is it. So she owns quite a few different properties in Mount Shasta. She has really spectacular property. She has a house that has a few other houses attached to it, with a yard and so forth, pretty close to in town. Then she's got another property which is seven or eight bungalows all together around a courtyard, which would be perfect for vegan educational center of some kind or retreat center. And then she has another property. She's the only one that has an actual house up on Mount Shasta. You would never know it was there. You go off on this little tiny unmarked road off the main road that goes up Squaw Meadow, and there it is, this retreat center, actually. It's a beautiful retreat center with a house and some smaller cabins. And Eckhart Tolle has given retreats there, and other people, famous people have. And anyway, she's now a vegan and wants to turn it over to have everything for vegan use. And she's interested in us maybe doing something with that. But one thing specifically also, I guess I'll say two things. One is, if you have any thoughts about this or any interest and being part of something up at Mount Shasta, let me know. She also said that I'm not sure if it's a room or a small house, she would like to make available to someone who's a vegan, a World Peace Diet person would be ideal, free rent. And they can basically live there, as her way of supporting a person who is working to spread the vegan message. So I guess that's her idea, is that they would be living there without rent-free, and then in a kind of a convenient place, and not just a sort of remote, but the town is very nice. It's everything is there that you need. And that's a possibility. So if you yourself, or if you know someone who you think would like to take advantage of that offer for a place to stay without paying any rent, and then I guess there's an agreement that you'll be spending some time every day, either through the internet or some other way, spreading the vegan message, as that's the way to pay the rent, I guess, basically. And she was saying it would be connected with someone who could help with some of the tasks, the occasional tasks, like maybe helping shoveling some snow. She's about 60 years old, and she's in pretty good shape, but she's just like someone that could help think with a few things around the place, too, she said. So I thought I would just pass that on. And let me know. Just send me an email. We'll tell everything.net if you're interested in any of these things that I'm talking about in Mount Shasta. All right. So I think I'm going to stop here. It's now the letter 7. I was talking earlier also to Lily Macy, and I was hoping that we could maybe have a couple of words. She's it now in her 4. I'll let her explain it. And then maybe we can hear a little bit from Judy. I know Judy's here. So here's, I'm going to unmute Lily's phone.
Hi,
yes.
Will.
Okay, yes, hi.
Hi, Will, and I have to gather myself for your mouse poem just tore me up.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh, my God. Yeah. The beauty of nature,
yeah.
And I live here with little mice, too.
Right,
and
I know.
They're precious, and at least when a cat catches one, because my cats are indoors, but if they catch one, I usually can get it away from them and get them out into the forest, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
What did you want me to talk about?
I thought you wanted to talk about
Real Peace Diet Sunday, right?
Yeah, Real Peace Diet Sunday and some of the things you're discovering through that process a little bit.
I've been doing this now. This in October 13th, it will be 4 years. A weekly reading of the World Peace Diet, which I do and make commentary on and then open it up for discussion. And we have newcomers every week. Some, not many, but, one or two. Every week someone comes. And last week, a woman said, I'm already a vegan, but we're reading The Domination of the Feminine. And she said, I'm already a vegan because we were talking. And thank you for that wonderful guest. I guess her name was Christy. Christy,
yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful what you're doing. Wonderful. Thank you. Mm-hmm. But anyway, what she said to me really had an impact because I was reading The Domination of the Feminine, which is chapter 7. And that chapter is just, just rips your heart out, You have a gentle way of ripping a person's heart out, Will. It's very gentle. And you did that to me almost 11 years ago, and that's why I'm a committed vegan activist. It was like, no question, people have to know about this. But anyway, so
right.
She said that what I read to her was so about the cattle being, the poor cows just being endlessly in stalls, never seeing the light of day, being milked dry, being raped, all that is in there, and I read all that. Very hard for me to read. I'm telling you, this is my 8th reading, my 4th public reading, and my 8th reading, and it gets harder and harder for me to read it. I mean, it's just like my eyes fill with tears as I'm reading. And it's just so deeply painful. I don't know, you were talking about vegan words, and it was just like... deeply
right.
painful. I don't know. Maybe we just use a lot of adjectives for
right,
what
right,
vegans
right.
feel, but
right,
for what
right.
vegans feel when they're feeling joy and pain. But
right.
So what a lot of people think that they read the World Peace Diet once, and my group is for vegans and non-vegans. I actually started it for non-vegans because I wanted to spread the message, but
right.
I've got a lot of vegans who come. In fact, most of the people who come are vegans. And I don't feel like I'm preaching to the choir at all because
right.
the World Peace Diet has something new in every page to pull at you and to actually bring forth activism, especially that chapter, that one, and then we're going on to the next chapter. I think it's the next one, The Dilemma of Work. I mean, those two chapters, if you just read those, you couldn't keep your mouth shut, and I don't mean to shove it down people's throat or be
right.
unkind, but when I end a conversation, I always try to bring it around to a vegan message in one way or another, and it's because I have the World Peace Diet in front of me, and I was thinking about this. I was thinking, well, people watch videos, and a picture is worth 1,000 words, but it's not. The words penetrate a different level of the soul. So when you hear, as a man thinketh, so is he, that thinking has nothing to do with a visual video. A video, I saw beaks cut off before I ever read the World Peace Diet, and I said, I'm never eating chicken again, but I ate chicken again. Because that video passes through because you're in information overload, but the world
right.
peace diet penetrates a fundamental core and a resistance. Sometimes I myself, as a vegan activist now, almost 11 years as a vegan activist, sometimes I have a resistance to it. I think I just don't want to bring it up anymore. I don't want to bring it. It's too painful. I can't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I go and I read the World Peace Diet every week because I'm committed to it. I'm committed for the duration. I don't know how long. You don't ask me. I didn't think it would go on for 4 years. I really didn't. But it's going on, and new
mm-hmm.
people are joining. We, you know, our email list gets bigger and bigger. And this is the way I can do this. I live an hour from the nearest town because you could
mm-hmm.
say, why don't you start, face to face? Well, it's really hard for me. I'd
sure.
love to, but I have, you know, trees in the way, weather in the way. I'm really out
right.
here. So this is
right.
the only way I can be a vegan activist. But because I continue to read the World Peace Diet literally on a daily basis and have done so now, this is my 11th year of reading it. We were reading it before I started the study group. We were reading it before dinner, a few paragraphs every night, my husband and I. But because I keep these powerful words, because just look what you did with that mouse. You are a words, you cut through it on such a level that it makes people say, I never saw it that way before. And I, you know, this woman was barely just a brand new vegan, and she wasn't fully vegan. And she said, after you read what you read, I have to be vegan. And that's really what happens. So that's why I'm so
yeah.
committed to this book. I mean, it's not that there aren't wonderful books out there and wonderful videos. It's just
mm-hmm.
that this book is superb. It's a wonderful, and if people come to my study group, great. I'd love you to come. It's a free conference
yeah.
call every Sunday at 5 o'clock Pacific
right.
time, 8 o'clock Eastern. And I've been
right.
doing this, and, you know, I don't know how long I'm going to be allowed to do this. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
When
right.
I say, you know, health-wise or whatever, I'm an older person now. I hate to say it, but
right.
I am.
Right.
You know, and I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if Will and Madeline can traipse all over the world, I can do this. So anyway, I don't know what else you want me to say. I'm just saying that the World Peace Diet, don't think you read it if you read it once, and don't even think you read it if you read it twice or, you know, three times, because I literally have read it 8 times, and it's never, ever old. It's always riveting. It's always so powerful that you, in a gentle way, that's Will. I mean, he's gentle, beautiful, spiritual, gentle being, and then he just rips your heart out. And it's okay, because that is what keeps you going as a vegan and an activist, because everybody on this line is an activist. So
right.
if you want to be effective and have you know, references at your fingertips, I call them vegan bullets, little vegan bullets that I say, little things like, you know, even the water thing. You know, it only takes 300 gallons of water a day to feed a vegan, but it takes 4,000 gallons of water today to feed an omnivore. I just want you to know that. That's what's happening here. And, you know, people
right.
go, oh, I didn't know that. These are little vegan bullets that
mm-hmm.
I have put together and over the years.
Beautiful.
You know, and you use your creativity to do it. And, you know, just even the thing with imagine a cow who loves to roam and who are, you know, they're herding animals and they love to be
right.
together and they love to hang out together. Imagine being isolated in a stall for the rest of your natural life, which isn't very long because you're completely milked out. By the time you're 3 years old, you're ready for the slaughterhouse, and the only walk you ever take is to the slaughterhouse. Now, I don't put that heavy a bullet out there unless it comes to that, and people go,
right.
Whoa. But, you know, sometimes I don't have anything. Sometimes I can't do anything but that with that particular person. So if they're willing
right.
to listen, and then I thank them. I say, thank you for listening to that, because I've
mm-hmm.
had people hang up on me. And we're talking about my insurance company. We're talking, because I'm not online. So I actually revel in not being online, because I actually
mm-hmm.
deal with the public daily on
right.
different things.
Yeah,
and I deal with my voice. and I deal with my expression and the things I know. So I use, I don't have to type it all in. I talk to people, and every single call I make, I know that by the end of the call, one way or another, they're going to hear about the World Peace Diet, and I'll say go to worldpeacediet.com. I have to do it. I feel like I can't live here and take up space without doing something for the vegan cause. And I just want to let you, I just want to end this, unless you want me to say anything more, with this. I just went to see some friends, and I've been a theatrical person. I've been involved with that, and that I'm way out here now. But I've still been involved, and I have friends in the theater. I went to see my most unfavorite play this last week, and it was called Waiting for Godot, and you've all heard of it, and many of you have seen it, and I hate it. But I went to see it because it was my friends were in it, and they did a magnificent job with a very difficult play. And and it's, of course, all about the mindlessness and the uselessness of life. And I was thinking about that cow sitting in her crate and how she has absolutely – I mean, that play just went along with what I was reading on World Peace Diet Sunday, because that cow is waiting for someone to deliver her from this totally useless, horrible life, and there's no Godot coming to get her out. And that's what that play was about. And her play never ends. When that play ended, everybody stood up and clapped because we were so glad that the play was over, because we didn't even want to take 2 hours of our time being totally tortured by this existential thought that there's no escape.
Right.
You know, we can't get out of here. He's never coming. No one's going to rescue us. And that's what the cows of this planet and the pigs and the chickens and the...
Right.
I'm going to hang up now. I'm going to hang up. I'm telling you, being a vegan needs a new language. It needs a new language because it superimposes veganism. Once you're a really committed vegan and you know what it is and you know what's happening here, it's so hard to think that this is going on and on and on, and then you wonder what kind of planet is this, and then you know that it's a bloodthirsty planet is what it is. Rivers of blood.
Yeah.
And I have to say one more thing. I talked to this lovely 39-year-old man, and I said to him, imagine somebody landing on our planet. And I was thinking of With the Eyes of an Angel from World Peace Diet. Imagine somebody landing on this planet not knowing what this was and looking around and seeing the way we treat each other and the way we're constantly killing each other and torturing each other and the animals that live on this planet. What would they think? And that guy said, wow, I've never thought of it that way.
Mm.
So you get people to think. So it's much more than watching a video.
Right.
You get them to think. And even just little bullets of information.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks.
Thank you, Lily.
You know I'm a passionate person, so I apologize if I upset anyone.
No, I think it was very interesting. Thanks. Yeah, thank you. That was really beautiful. Thanks.
Thanks,
Will.
We'll talk
to you later. Yeah.
Thanks for destroying my life for the better.
Right.
Thanks.
And you're carrying it on. All right. Thank you. So that play. If you've seen that play, Waiting for Godot, I remember watching it. I think when I was in college, and I know what Lily means. It's excruciating to sit there and you know. Be in this, it's a Samuel Beckett's existential meaninglessness of human life, but, you know, it comes out of a herding culture, right? And that comes right out of the subconscious, I think, or the overall consciousness of what we're doing to millions and billions of animals right now. And as we sow, we reap. And that feeling of, how could we ever inflict this on other living beings? And yet we find the same thing in many ways we're experiencing it, you know, ourselves. And I really appreciate what Lily said about the power of words of a book as opposed to videos, because, you know, sometimes I think we live in a society where there's this basic idea that the only way to really change people is to make a video, that, you know, videos are much more powerful than books are. And I think she touched on something when she talked about how, you know, as we think, so we are, and, you know, we're thinking in words, and a book can actually formulate thoughts in words that can touch us at a very deep level and transform the way that we look at things. I think there's a power in books that perhaps is being lost nowadays as we get pushed into being so busy that we don't have time to read books anymore. Many people feel that they just can't read books. So we have to get everything in a video, a maximum 3-minute video very often. So, I think that was really a lot of precious insights shared, and also the idea that, you know, reading the World Peace Talk for the 8th time is bringing even more meaning, and it's still vivid and impactful. And I've heard that from people. I've heard people even 10 or 20 or 30. One lady said 27 times she'd listened to them, and she was still hearing new things. So I think these are very helpful to understand. It's not just the World Peace Talk. I think anything that expresses a truth that's impactful, that we have many layers in our consciousness that can mature and evolve to hear the message or receive the message at ever deeper levels. And as we do that, it transforms us more in the foundation of who we are, so that our commitment gets deeper and our ability to carry the message, to embody the message, to exemplify the message increases, because it's not just something we're thinking about. It's something that has entered more deeply into the flow of our deep thoughts and how we see the world. So I think this has been seen. I mean, for me, you know, living in a Zen monastery in Korea, there was two types of monks. There was the meditation monks and there was the sutra monks. And the sutra monks would sit for 8 hours a day and read out loud the sutras, you know, the words of wisdom. And the meditation monks would sit for 8 hours or 10 hours a day and just sit in silence and contemplate the essence of mind. But the idea is that's a very valid practice. Not only meditation is a valid practice, but to recite sutras or to read books repeatedly is a way of ever deepening our understanding. And we would chant, very often chant a long prayer like a sutra, like the Heart Sutra, for example. And maybe on the 400th time, suddenly it clicks. You know, it's like, oh, that's now. You know, so really, I think there's many people who have experienced this over the millennia, that reading and rereading words that are written from a certain consciousness can bring us into that very consciousness. And very often it takes reading it multiple times. So that's one of the things that for me as an author kind of bothers me sometimes, when someone says they read the book in 2 hours and now they're done with that, on to the next thing, and they think, gosh, I don't think they really read it. They just read it in 2 hours. So I'm really delighted that Lily and so many other of you as well are helping the ideas to grow and deepen in our society and in yourself. There is someone with their hand up here. I'm not sure who it is. Area code, I think, 321. I'll go ahead and unmute your phone and see who it is. Hello.
Hi, it's Davi.
Hi, who is it?
It's Davi. Daviana.
Hi, Davi. Yes. Thanks for joining us. And do you have a question or thought to share?
Well, I've had a lot of things happening. So I missed the last few meetings, but I haven't been getting the invites. And I don't know why, because that email address is actually still active, even though
yeah,
I lost an
question.
Email address.
Well,
and thought.
That's something, I think in general nowadays there's problems with spam blockers just interfering with things that come in a few times, and then it's sort of, I've seen this myself, I get a lot of emails from certain people, and then at one point I don't get it anymore, and then if I go to my known spam, it's called, or whatever it is, and there it is there. So I have to, like, go in and click on it and say, this is not spam. And then it comes after that, and it always comes. And I should maybe mention that. I think that's what happens, and I think a lot of the people that sign up on our list, you know, they get it for a while, and then they stop getting it, and they sort of lose touch with us. It's because it's going into spam, and then it never, that's it. That's, it'll never reach them again unless they go in and inform their mail server, whatever it is, Gmail or whoever it is, that this is not spam. Send this to my inbox. So that's probably what happened. I mean, if you signed up,
you're using my domain. And
that'll still do it. It doesn't make any difference.
I've checked the spam folder and haven't seen it in there. I don't actually my admin gives me pretty free rein to decide what goes on. So I don't know if maybe there was a bounce at one point and it got deleted. I just wanted to make sure that you still had the email address and could maybe try sending something to me again in case somehow I got deleted from your list.
What's your last name? Davi? I mean, I just gotta look it up quickly.
It's Russell. But I don't Davi. Know if
so
that's
is it info
what you
so
put.
Is it info at rawveganista.com?
Both of those are mine.
You can mail
me at either one of those.
Won't. Yeah. Okay, so this is something I think that's relevant for everybody to hear, though. So, if you or people that aren't getting it, I don't know how to reach them. I mean, once it goes into spam, I can't reach you anymore. So, check your spam folders, and I can check to make sure it's still going out to you. But chances are it's still going, and somewhere along the line it's getting blocked. That's what's happening. I mean, I've lived with it for the last, 8 years, so I know this is what happens. So,
well, since I've missed so many, I don't know exactly what I've missed. I actually had a question, but I didn't want
also,
to bring
everything
it up
is,
until I told you.
Everything is archived, so you can always go to our website, worldpeacemastery.com, click on conference. I'll just save it.
Sasa sent it to me. That's how I knew how to get in touch with you today. Helped me. So I have the list, and I'm working my way through it. But as I said, there's been a lot of transitioning since the last time we spoke, and there's another transition that's about to happen. And I hope it's the last one, but I'm not entirely sure. So I actually, if you could send me information about the thing in Shasta, I'd be really interested, although I'm probably going to be existing and helping at a sanctuary in Florida indefinitely.
Great.
But we'll see. It's something I
right.
want to be with animals. I don't just want to be doing my own projects. But this might result in me being able to open up another community garden as well. So that's good. I have a totally weird question for you, though.
All right.
It's totally random. I wanted to know if you knew about the acquisition of Daiya Cheese
by the Japanese pharmaceutical company. Right, exactly. I know it's interesting. I just read right before the call that Daiya is the fastest growing vegan company in North America. It's doing very well. But it's also
been acquired by
a huge Japanese pharmaceutical corporation, which seems like the exact opposite of who you'd want to have acquiring Daiya, right?
Well, they also conduct animal testing because it's mandatory. I'd make my own cheese, so that's, not exactly relevant to me, but I know that a lot of us use stuff like that because it's quick and it's easy and it's, simple to find these days. I wanted to know how you felt about it, if you had any thoughts to share on that.
Okay. All right. I can talk about that. Thanks for bringing up the question. I'll share. Is that it for now then? It's actually 7:30 our time, so I should probably wrap up the call because it's 10:30 Eastern time, which is really late. So,
all of that is kind of it. I wanted to know how you felt about that. I wanted to ask you if you could send me info about the Shasta thing, and I wanted to make sure that you know how to get in touch with me because I've wanted to get in touch with you guys for a while, and I just haven't had any way to do it.
Right, right. Great. Okay. Thanks so much for raising your hand and being on our call.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, yeah. Bye-bye.
He's doing
it. Yeah, so that's a very the kind of thing that we get a lot, you know, in the vegan movement. We have a vegan, you know, so-called vegan company, but you know, in the real world, things always get muddy. And the question is, should we buy diet cheese because they're owned by a company that's a pharmaceutical company that does testing on animals, so it's not a vegan company anymore. And I don't think it's a serious question, but I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer to this, because I think it's really where we, each one of us, chooses to draw our lines on these kinds of things. You know, some people don't want to go into a store that serves any, that sells any meat, you know, and we're lucky we have one in Santa Rosa, but there are very few. There's only a few in the whole country that don't sell meat, so we go in and we give money to a store that's selling meat, and we buy tofu or tempeh or, you know, broccoli. And we have, that's, you know, that's part of the compromise of living in a not yet vegan world. And so personally, I think diet cheese is handy. It's good quality. You know, it seems to be relatively good quality. We don't really buy diet cheese. We don't buy really any processed foods to speak of very much. But we do sometimes buy them, mainly to show other people what we can do. So we have guests come over who aren't vegan, we can show, this is diet cheese, and we have some in the refrigerator to kind of share with people, help them. You know, I think we'll probably continue to do that unless we find, if we can find an alternative that's better. A lot of times Madeline makes her own vegan cheese from yeast, and I don't know how she does it, but it's delicious. So that's a great question, you know. We're constantly being faced with these kinds of questions as vegans, and that's one of the reasons I think it's good to have local groups or have these kinds of discussions, just to get a little clarity. What do we do when we need to have something that requires an animal product? Like, I play the piano. I mean, I don't think there's any piano that doesn't have felt hammers. So there's some felt on the hammers of the piano. I'm never going to play the piano again. No, I mean, I just think, you know, it's something that it would be great if someone made a great vegan piano. You know, I'd buy it. But in the meantime, you know, this is the world we're inhabiting. So that's what I'd say about that. I wanted to draw everybody's attention, as we really need to wrap up here, but just draw your attention to the resources for the Wilkie's Diet Circle. And the essay that I mentioned last time in August is up online on the six paramitas, and I discuss the importance, basically, of working on our own consciousness as the foundation of a successful movement for veganism. And then bring in the six paramitas as one example of a practice for that. There's also, a few other things. Madeline's new vegan cooking video is up online, and we've got two more in the pipeline that are coming very soon. And it's her vegan green smoothie and the herbal and harvesting herbs from our garden. So they go together. Great video by Michael Ansfield, Open Your Heart, See the Beauty, Embrace Compassion, Live Vegan. I love that. That's a great line. Eric Wiseman is a wonderful person, the founder of Evolution Vegan Pet Food, has a YouTube channel, and you can check that out. And then there's a whole bunch of other things. I mean, there's so many things. I really don't have time to go through everything. But as always, there's a lot of good news. There's also sometimes somewhat bad news, in the sense of, more things being cut down and so forth. But there's really some tremendously positive things happening too. And it's great to see James Cameron's film making progress, I think. The Game Changers, it's called. So I invite you to kind of look through that, the resources, and click on things that you may find interesting and helpful. And so just in the closing waning moments of our time together, I would like to, again, thank all of you for joining us on this call. This is, unfortunately, we're going to have to skip a couple of weeks. It's exciting. I mean, we have a really absolutely packed lecture schedule in Spain, Switzerland, in England. I mean, almost every single night we have lectures, sometimes day and night, sometimes two in one day. And then India, same thing every day, or in a different city. And then Taiwan, same thing. Hong Kong, and then mainland China, same thing. Basically, really, I like it. I mean, we like it. You know, if we're going to be doing this, we might as well, you know, meet the people and give the lectures and interviews and so forth. So we'll be traveling throughout these countries over the next few months. We'll be flying in December to Hawaii, and we'll be there for about 2 weeks, also doing events on the Big Island and Maui, and maybe one on Oahu, perhaps the first night. So, and then when we come back, actually we'll be doing a tour in our RV. So that'll be going through the southern part of the United States. Maybe we can come through your area if you're in Southern California, New Mexico, Arizona, Texas, Georgia, Florida. We're planning on visiting my mother and in Florida and some other people, and hopefully Florida isn't too devastated by the hurricanes, and we'll see, I guess, firsthand how that is. But that's the plan, and so we hope to stay in touch with you. Feel free to send emails. We'll try to post things on our on Facebook if we can. You can go to the World Peace Diet Facebook group. I recommend, you know, signing up for that. Also, my own Will Tuttle Facebook page. We put things there. There's a World Peace Diet Facilitators group as well, which I quite honestly, I think I should post things there more. But people do. It's a good place to discuss things. And so we have a page, a World Peace Diet page, Will Tuttle and World Peace Diet, both Facebook pages. So we'll be keeping in touch, I think, primarily that way over the next few months. And then we'll be getting together again in December, on the third Thursday of December. That will be December 14th, 21st. So a few months from now on the solstice, the equinox of the solstice. Tomorrow is Madeline's birthday, so we're going to have a great vegan day, as we always do, and I'm so grateful for Madeline's presence in my life and in our lives, and we've got some projects we're working on, besides the videos and things, some more books and things, and we'll keep you posted on those things as well. So that's about it, I guess, for now. And again, my heart is very touched to be able to share in this way with you all. And thanks so much for joining in. This call is recorded, and I'll put the link up for this one. All the calls are recorded and archived. And so feel free to share with other people. And the World Peace Diet training also, and of course the World Peace Diet Sunday. If you know anybody in Nashville, of course, let them know about Chrissy Benson's group, and I'll give the information for her as well on the email that I'll send out later this evening. So much love to you all. Thanks again for being the change, as Gandhi said, that we would like to see in our world. And have a great couple of months until we can meet again. Thank you all so much for your input and your ideas and support. It means so much to us and really has an impact, I think, far beyond what we may realize at the time. I think no effort is ever lost. So thanks again, and we'll be in touch. And I'll close here with a piece of music. I think maybe, how about, since we talked today about calves and cows, we'll have the calf song here to close our time together. Much love, and have a beautiful few months.